And one last thing that I would really like for you to know is that believing a lie is just as powerful as believing the truth.
Do you need encouragement to turn tragedies into your own triumphant life story? If so, this podcast is for you. Listen to powerful guests who have persevered through challenges so you can gain strength to build your championship life. The host of Professor of Perseverance Podcast, Dr. James Perdue.
Hey, it's that time again. As we come in to motivate, inspire, give some hope and encouragement for the ones we know that are suffering, struggling, got challenges, going through adversities. I mean, something's going on all the time. I don't care who you are. Even if you just passed and got through something, you know life is happening and it's coming back to get you again. Hey, I'm the Professor of Perseverance. Thank you for coming to the Professor of Perseverance podcast. I'm Dr. James Perdue. Hey, I'm a guest today. Now, this is going to be a good one. I can tell you already. Now, I say that all the time, but this is going to be a good one. All right. She suffered from years of silence from abuse. Let's go spit it out. Abuse. The trauma of being drugged and waking up in a garage. It was at that point, she was says, was her pivoting point that she called purpose. And to share her book coming out, it's already out here. Let's put it on up here. It's called The Girl in the Garage, 3 Steps to Letting Go of Your Past, which was a bestseller on Amazon. And welcome to the show, Sharon Hughes. Hey, your book's in your way. The book's blocking you.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on.
Well, we appreciate you coming on and giving your time to be here again, share your tragedy, your suffering, and how you were able to get past it. And that way, it's going to, you know as well as I do, this is why you're doing this. It's going to provide hope for somebody else in the future.
Exactly. That's exactly why I'm doing it.
Yes. So it's not that you or I or anybody else I've had on the show are Superman, Superwoman, Superperson, whatever. It's not that. It's just we got a normal life like others. Something happened. We were able to persevere. We want to help you get through yours as well. So if you don't mind, Sharon, let's go ahead and start your story where you think is the best.
Well, you know, it's such a long story, but we don't have all night, so I'll just give you the cliff notes.
And I tell people to give the Reader's Digest version.
You like to go deep and dirty and get it all out there.
I don't even know if a lot of these people today even know what a Reader's Digest is.
Oh, my gosh. I remember reading that when I was a kid. But, yeah, it's still around. Well, you know, the story is it's kind of an interesting one. And I wrote the book, which is actually a workbook, I should add. But the first part of the book is my story. And I tell it as if you and I were sitting there having coffee. And I walk you through all these crazy tragedies that I went through. And I say, look at the pattern that's happening here. The belief starts to set in. Because a lot of people have terrible things happen to them. And they go into a lot of self-shame and they say, you know, I should have known better. I should have this and I should have that. Quite often, there's no way you could have, especially if you are a victim of some type of abuse that started when you were a child, which was the case with me. Abuse started at a very young age and there were multiple abusers. So by the time I got to the incident that happened in the garage, it was just another, it was like the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. So after years and years of different types of abuse, like I said, I was at a Halloween party and I was handed a drink. Now, I have to be clear, it wasn't a guy that handed me the drink. I was there with an older boy. I was 16. He was probably early 20s. And his sister handed me the drink. So, you know, a lot of people will say, well, you should have known better. Well, you know what? When you're 16 and you're just out of course, that's how we all think, is like nothing like this would ever happen. And we certainly think, yeah, well, and you also think like worst case scenario is I'm going to get a hangover, right? You don't think that something horrible is going to happen. And that's, you know, and that's the way it ought to be. You shouldn't have to worry that because you have a drink at a party, that something worse is going to happen to you. So anyways, I was handed that drink and I remember going into the bathroom and I had taken a couple of sips and I was looking at my costume in the mirror. And immediately I felt like, I'm so tired. I just need to lay down for a minute. And I laid down on the bathroom floor. And I woke up in a garage at a different location than the party 7 hours later. And I was being assaulted by the guy that I'd come to the party with. So even though that's bad in itself, it's really what happened afterwards that sealed the deal. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. It was coming home at 4 something in the morning and the porch light was off and the front door was locked and I didn't have a key. I had to wake up my mom to let me in. And when she opened the door, she just looked at me. She didn't say, you know, where have you been? Are you okay? You know, I've been worried. No, I don't know parents like that. Like, that's just so crazy. I have kids. And if they're, you know, even 15 minutes late, I'm calling or texting and going, are you okay? Are you on your way home? But nothing was ever said. I didn't go to the doctor. There wasn't a police report. You know, there was no medical care. So what that did was really finalized the years of abuse that I'd already had, was that I was insignificant. What happened to me didn't matter. And that I was really just there for the taking. And from there on, there was never anybody safe to tell. I went into adulthood. I had other traumas happen in my early adult years. But it just set me up for such, you know, tragedy, right? And it took so many years before I came to the place of being able to face all the things that had happened to me and started trying to figure out how to work myself out of this.
Yeah, it's when you get to a point like you're talking like it, it's when you're waking up and then you're going, oh great, what's next? What's coming now? You know, because you've been through it, and you go, this is no different. I already know this. What's happening? And then it just seems like it just piles on. The old saying, when it rains, it pours. But we got to remember that even though it's pouring rain, we look for that to call the shining line at the clouds and whatever you want to call it. And, right. You know, when the rainbows come and it just seems like they're forever and a day before they ever get here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I had went to counseling, tried it with a couple of different people, and there was never a breakthrough, really. What was so pivotal for me was not that long ago, it was about 5, maybe 6 years ago at the most. I was laying in bed. I had, you know, was woke up and I was praying and I just said, I am not going to make it. I'm not going to make it through this stuff. And I really heard, people find it hard to believe. Some folks go, oh, that's normal. But I heard the Lord say, what are you believing about yourself? And I just thought, really? Like, you know, I just feel like I am there for the taking. I remember saying to a therapist one time, I felt like it said on my forehead, use me or abuse me. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I heard God say was, is it true? So what are you believing about yourself? And is it true? That was pivotal. That was the big game changer. And that's really the core of the work that I do and what I've written about in my book. So many people have tragedies, you know, situation like yours or like mine, where they can walk away and say, you know, what good could I possibly be? Like, this happened to me. I'm useless. I'm hopeless. I'm there for the taking. You know, I'm nothing. Nobody cares about me. If we start believing those things, that's where the real emotional and I believe spiritual and physical paralysis will set in. Because that's kind of like tapping out and just saying, okay, I'm done. I give up.
yes, paralysis in all forms, mm-hmm. not just what you're going through and what's coming next and
right.
how long you have to endure it before something good comes. Yeah. Once you've checked out mentally, physically, spiritually, everything else, emotionally, mm-hmm. you become paralyzed permanently in your whole aspect of life.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's very true. Yeah, there's a really interesting book called The Body Keeps Score, and I can't think off the top of my head who wrote it, but it's interesting about how when your body suffers trauma, so whether it's physical abuse or it could even be some other form of trauma, how your body keeps that score. So there's a lot of people that have suffered, you know, horrible traumas, and they look like they're fine on the outside. They're not dealing with it. And what happens is your body's keeping that score. It comes out in other ways. It could come out, you know, as migraines. It could come out in, you know, stomach issues, skin issues. Like there's a way your body tries to cope with things when our hearts are broken.
Yeah. I've never heard of that book. I'll have to look it up.
So yeah, it's really interesting.
Sounds interesting that the body keeps score. And after saying that and giving the example, yeah, I can see that. You know, some people go through whatever it is, but then they stay focused on it so long that they get mm-hmm. sick in other areas.
Yeah.
But then they neglect that because they're so worried about the past.
Right. Yeah, it's important to get some kind of help. You know, you might have to shop around and figure out, you know, who's a good fit for what you're dealing with. But our bodies and our minds were not created to go through trauma and just hold it all inside. That's why, you know, like we see people with PTSD that came back from war. But for listeners, you can have PTSD from other situations. And I was diagnosed with PTSD a few years back. But I went through a certification for critical incident stress debriefing, and I learned so much about you can get PTSD from being in a car accident. You can get PTSD from witnessing, you know, either acts of war, or maybe you see a bank robbery or a shooting or something like that. The mind is very, very interesting.
Oh yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah, especially when you see, like I said, when people go out to war and then they see this stuff for the first time. Especially mm-hmm. when they, I've heard and read other stories about how they've seen the first child, innocent child, has mm-hmm. been blown up or killed mm-hmm. from yeah. something that they've done, but they had to stop the enemy and everybody else is in the way. Yeah, and then they really hit them with the PTSD the first time seeing a child, innocent child mm-hmm. has been involved. Yeah, so
yeah.
Well, I tell you, it's amazing what we go through now. And I'm like you, and when we're suffering, we think we're the only one that's ever been through this at that time. You know, yes, other people's been through it, but they haven't been through it like I've been through it. And
yeah.
plus all the back stuff that baggage that I carry along with it. You know,
mm-hmm.
but I'm like you, at the end of our fingertips on our keyboard, we have all the information in the world that we can find help and find some way to get over, or it may not get totally over it, but at least I tell people, the sooner you can accept what's going on, the
yeah.
sooner you can heal. You don't have to love it. You don't have to like it. Okay.
Yeah.
But when you can accept, hey, this has happened, mm-hmm. my fault or not my fault, whatever, and it's time to get healed up and move forward in life.
Yeah. And I want to touch on what you just said when you said my fault or not my fault. No, so often when we're talking about people suffering through abuse, the abusers have a way of convincing their victim. Well, I wouldn't do this if you didn't this. You know, you're making me, you make me so mad. I have to hit you. Things like that. That does something to a child. It causes a child to suffer in such a different way that even if they get away from that type of abuse, if they don't get help, so often they're drawn to something about that abuser's style. That's why we'll see people that marry and remarry and remarry, and they think, oh, I finally met this nice guy, and he turns out to be just a different version of the last guy. It's this pattern We have to break these patterns that run in our mind on the subconscious level. And boy, we could do a couple of shows on that because that goes deep.
You got that right. Yes. And yeah, they're recycling themselves back through into the same garbage. Whatever reason, they attract that. And the perpetrator, the predator, they recognize it quick. Mm-hmm. And that's they know who to go after in a party. They know who to go after in the walking down the sidewalk. They can tell by looking. They're just that good at it. And it's body imaging, walking with your head down, look like you don't have self-confidence, your low self-esteem. They know who to come after.
Yeah. Yeah, quite often they do. But what's really interesting is people that have been through those type of things, a lot of times they don't have healthy boundaries. And if you grew up with parents that were emotionally abusive, it seems like it's really easy to deceive people that have gone through that because they don't, it's like, everybody seems to have like a lie detector, you know, within us where we'll go, oh, something doesn't feel right. But when you're told as a child over and over, oh no, you're wrong. It's fine. Oh, that didn't happen. You're mistaken. It does something to you. So when you grow up, it's like your whole discernment is off and that has to really be repaired so that you stop buying the lies of the world around you.
Yeah, that mechanism that questions what's going on has been broken because of going through that. And they have now inherit, indoctrinate, however you want to put it, reborn into this is wrong and not right or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they don't know to question it anymore. And so, like I said, they need to seek this help or they're going to be the repeating again as they get older into this cycle and then keep the cycle going if they have kids.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
So, I don't know the odds of it and everything, but I would imagine very few break out of it early in life. They may break out later in life as they get older and more wiser and realize what's right and wrong. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that would be an interesting study to see how many people early compared to later on finally wake up.
Yeah, that would be interesting because, you know, I can remember my dad saying things to me, like he would say, oh, you're not good enough. And I know he had really deep emotional issues and he was very controlling and he was one of my abusers. But I think his generation had this school of thought that if you tell somebody they're not good or good enough, that it's going to make them work harder. So for some kids, that works. For me, it crushed me. But I think if you have a really good supportive, you know, parental family and just, you know, everything's in place. But if you have this really great supportive parents, I don't think they would be saying to you, you're not good enough. They would be saying that's good, but let's work harder. You know? So I was trying to get that in my head. Like, how could that work? I don't know that. Cause I would never say to my children, oh, you're not good enough. I would tell them that, you know, that's pretty good, but keep working on it. I think you need to tweak this. It's different when somebody says you're not doing that right. Or that's not right, as compared to saying you're not good enough. That's where it damages your self-worth.
Yeah. When they specifically pinpoint you, right? Not that what you're doing may not be good enough. It's because what you is why it's not. And I want to come into a little bit here. And it's not also saying, hey, yeah, that's good, but you could get better. And see, then you got to watch the parents that you can never be perfect enough for them.
Right.
See, that's another issue right there. I mean, they don't abuse you by putting you down so much. It just, you can never reach their goal of achievements because they're always moving the line to make it perfect or whatnot. Yeah. So that's a different issue as well.
Oh, that's huge. And gosh, we certainly see that with kids that play sports. Boy,
yes.
Or even in academics, it's like that perfection just it's not enough unless it's absolutely perfect, which is so unrealistic to do to kids. Kids need to be able to be kids. And nobody learns from being perfect. You learn from making mistakes and trying again.
I always say in sports, especially in the lower, probably 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds, that maybe mom and dad are not allowed to come watch them play.
I've heard before.
But I'm not saying not be at the park. Let them go watch other kids play, and then, but they would have to videotape their children. That way they can watch the game at home, but they're not out there yelling and screaming and, belittering them in front of everybody and their friends and all the other parents. But that probably wouldn't work either, because then they're going to do it all in the house and the kids are going to hear it all by themselves. So That wouldn't work either. But I do know one parent, and I really thought a lot of him. He wanted to coach his son, 13 to 15 year old baseball, but he wanted to be in the league, but not coach his son. So he coached a separate team that his son played on. That way he can watch his son during the games and then coach the other team, so he'd be involved that way. And then that way he wouldn't be so hard on his own son. That's why I was saying maybe they shouldn't be at their own children's game. Just go watch someone else's children, have it videotaped, then you can watch it, still watch it. But that may be even worse. Because then they'll go like, they'll stop and rewind everything. Right there, Wisdom Seek. Right there. They'll keep, so that probably wouldn't work either. But I really admired that gentleman he coached another team. His son played on a different team. And even when they played against each other, but he could still watch his son play, be involved, but he wouldn't be there to actually put all the bad stuff on him.
Yeah.
So that was cool. All right. Now that you talked about 5, 6 years ago, you talked about the Lord talking to you, waking you up finally, giving the spiritual slap around. Okay. And so was that the point? Now, I know this is not true. It may be the point you finally realize things, but earlier you've had to be able to persevere. You get through a challenge, a difficulty, and was able to finally get up and go, and then something else happens in life, then finally persevere, get up and go. But was this finally the wake me up that puts you more brighter, more positive, or have you always been that way and just life just followed you the wrong way?
Well, I've always been that way. And, some people will say, what was that like your moment that you started to believe in God and stuff like that? And no, I actually can't remember a time in my life that I didn't believe in God. I think that, things happen and we get to make a choice whether we're going to use this thing that happened for good or if we're going to just shut down. And I think that he knew, because, I believe that God is all knowing. He knows what we're going to do 10 years from now. He knew that I would come to this point where I was searching in my life I was going into personal development. I had already been certified as a life coach, but I was going really deep and I was really searching. And I think that was just, it was that moment, because whatever somebody goes through, there's usually a journey of healing, a journey of learning. Now, I can't say that you won't have a miraculous type of turnaround, because I believe that anything is possible. I've heard of drug addicts suddenly being, healed from that type of thing. Something happens and they just snap to attention and they are able to walk away. Anything is possible. But it's so much in our mind. The battle is always starting in our mind of how are we going to respond? What do we believe about ourselves? What if we don't believe the things that we've been told? So, for example, I was in corporate training a few years ago, and I had already had this conversation with God that said, what are you believing about yourself and is it true? Well, so in this corporate setting, I had been given free creative reign to create any kinds of trainings. And I knew a lot of the managers wanted personal development, communication skills, and that type of thing. And I thought, okay, I'm going to experiment with these questions. So I had this room full of, it was men and women, you know, all different ages, different departments in the company. And I said, think of that thing that you've been dragging around, whether it's the coach that told you you won't make the cut, you know, it's the person that walked out on you, somebody said, I don't love you, whatever it is. I said, think of what that thing is and don't say it. Just hold on to that for a minute. I went through the whole training. And then at the end, I said, okay, that thing that you believed about yourself, see, who would you be or what would you be if you weren't that, if you weren't believing that? And a girl in the front row yelled out, free. And it really surprised me. And I talked to her after the class and I was like, okay, this is really interesting. I think I'm really onto something. So I did the same training with another group about a week later and two people started crying. One person was crying so hard she had to leave the room. And the other person was crying was a guy. He was in his probably about maybe mid-30s. He came up to me after and he said, I haven't talked to my family in 10 years and I'm going to call them tonight. And then I said, this is huge. If you can take what God said to me in that place and you can take that same question and put it into corporate training and get that kind of response, I knew this is it. This is cracking what I call the self-confidence and self-worth code. And that's really the premise of my book and all the work that I do is that who would you be if you stopped believing those lies? There's a really big difference between confidence and self-worth. A lot of people think they're the same thing, but confidence, I believe, is something that you can learn. I never had a problem with confidence. I was doing all kinds of very interesting things before I started dealing with this huge brokenness. My problem was self-worth. I believed I wasn't deserving of love and of good things. I believed I wasn't good enough, just like my father had said to me. I know that was a mouthful.
No, that's powerful that you're saying that and asking the question to other people and making them think, you know, they're finally cracking the egg open and to see what's in there. Is it the good yolk and yellow egg and all that good stuff? Or is it a rotten egg inside? And they're having to decipher and determine that with the question. And it's great to ask them point blank. I mean, because then there's no variation on what they know. This is the question. Straight point to the point and everything. And makes them think and then bring some emotions boiling to the top for them to figure out what's going on and have been silent through all this time.
Yeah, it was amazing. I think I went home and I cried a little and I just laid on the couch because I was like, what is happening here? It's so interesting when you've always believed a certain thing to be a certain way for you and you don't realize all the people around you are just hoping that nobody knows that they're going through the same thing. I've had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people tell me if they only knew that I struggled in my job, they would fire me. You know, if they only knew that I go home and, you know, this and this is going on, they wouldn't love me or, you know, they'd break up with me. Just all these things that people carry around with them. It's a messy, broken world in so many ways, but when you get to the other side of this, it's so worth that fight. I call it a bloody street fight because it's the easiest hard thing you do, and it's the hardest easy thing that you'll do, is that work to break what is holding you back and finally start believing the truth about yourself.
Now, I interviewed this one woman the other day, Donna. Donna, I'm going to steal this saying from you. I'm not going to steal it from you personally, but I'm giving you credit, Donna, that she said, once you're on the other side of good and everything like that, get through the difficulty and everything. She said, it's like a gift wrapped in sandpaper.
That's a good way to say it.
I told her it needs to be the name of her next book from there. So a gift wrapped in sandpaper, that would be awesome.
That is really good.
You're talking about the same thing. You know, once we get through and we fight this struggle, we fight this and persevere. And then what's on the other side is so beautiful because we learn how strong we are. Mm-hmm. We learn what we can endure. Not that we want any more. of anything coming, but we know when it does, or if it does, we're prepared for it and we can handle and move to the next thing in life as well.
So, yeah, that's right.
Today we're talking with Sharon Hughes, the girl in the garage, a 3 steps to letting go of your past. And that's huge right there in itself. The last part of the title, 3 steps to let go of your past, because too many of us want to live there. You know, I don't know if you ever watched any of Al Bundy back in the day. you know, Al Bundy, his thing was score 4 touchdowns in 1 game. Not all season, 1 game. And every time you see him telling somebody, yes, I'm the Al Bundy to score 4 touchdowns in 1 game. So good or bad, we hang around there way too much. There's nothing wrong about reminiscing, you know, the good old days. Sometimes going through the bad days is good for us because it shows you how far we've come in life. But as a friend of mine, Jan, would say, her dad would say, you know, we can go back and we can visit Pityville, but it's unacceptable for us to move in there and stay. And so that's when we need to move.
Yeah, you don't want to set up camp there. It's not, it doesn't feel good. You know, it doesn't feel good. You know, I think.
Well,
so
nobody
many
else wants to live there with you.
That's true.
They want to move on in life and move on. And I mean, they love you. They want to help you. But then there's a time they're going, pack your stuff up. Let's get out and let's have a better life. Because they don't want to be there.
Yeah, that's true.
So, all right. If you could give 2 or 3 or 1, if you need to, what do you think contribute for you to finally move on past, whether it's the girl in the garage or if it's something else or anything, what do you contribute that helps you move on, learn from it and expect better, but what helps you move on?
Well, no, I am faith-based, so that's been a really big part of it, is really staying in the truth about who I believe I am and what I believe about my Creator. Now, I know a lot of people have a really hard time. They're like, all these bad things go on in the world, and maybe they're angry with God. I have a section in my book about that, because we have free will. And whether we do good or bad, there's an action, a result, a consequence that comes from that. So what happened to me, there was a ripple effect. You know, that affected me, which affected other people around me. Now, I'm not angry with God because that person used their free will to do something bad. God didn't say, hey, go do this. So if people that are faith-based or they're wondering about God or they're mad at God, like, I get you. And you know what? It's okay to be mad at God. I have to say that. It's not like he doesn't know anyway.
He's big enough to handle it.
Well, and he knows. And you know what's so good about him? Is he understands we are his precious children. He looks at it and he's like, boo, I know what happened and I know why you hurt. He's not there waiting to thump you on the head. That was one of the things that really helped me to grow, because I always thought God was like my earthly father, this person that kept saying, you know, you're not good enough, and that he was waiting for me to mess up so he can thump me on the head. And that's not the case. I honestly believe with my whole heart that God is for you, not against you, no matter what you've done or has been done to you. And so especially for these that are suffering and saying, but all these things that were done to me, I know because I lived through it. And you can get through it too. Believe me, if I can get through it, you can get through it.
Amen, sister. Now, a quick little story here. You're talking about, you know, I'm like you. I want to know a loving God, not one that's waiting to throw the lightning bolt as soon as I get out of line. One time this one guy, and I didn't become a Christian until late in life. I was like 35 years old, but I grew up going to church. I was one of them who went because mom and dad made me go. Not that I learned anything, but some things sunk in. I grew up with the attitude thinking, I know there's a God, but it's hard to believe in him because of so much suffering that goes on. Mm-hmm. And that's what, so even when I had my injury, I got my neck broke playing football. I'm laying on the gurney. The doctor said I'll never walk again, maybe not move from my neck down. He said, put me in, told my family to put me in the nursing home, all this. But I remember laying there in the emergency room. And I remember, again, I wasn't a Christian then. I'm 19 years old. But I did say a, what would you call it, a thoughtless prayer, a thoughtless gesture. But I did say, God, if I'm the last person to ever be paralyzed, I'll accept this burden. Oh, yeah, like I'm going to be the only one ever to get paralyzed again. You know, so I'm throwing this wishful thought up in the air, knowing it's not going anywhere. You know, that's not how life works. God is not going to bargain with us. And so he let me go through it. But here's what I was getting to you. We have to watch who we talk with, because we got those false prophets, false teachers, people. Because one guy, when I was at school, one time wanted to save me, all right? And I asked him the question. I said, all right, man. He said, why did God let this happen to me? You know, why did he let me get a broken neck? You know, why did he let me get paralyzed? And his answer was, God wanted to show he had control over you. I said, what? Mm-hmm. Control? I said, why didn't he just break my pinky and then say, now next time it's going to be worse? I said, I don't get that. I said, I don't want to know a loving God, not one that's going to beat me down because I'm not doing what he wanted.
And, so, you know, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because we do have to be careful of the source. And anybody that tells you, like, oh, God said this, or oh, this is in the Bible, go look for yourself, because some people, they really do want to mislead because they like to be the know-it-all. Or maybe they want to be controlling. There's a whole lot of pastors that are very controlling. You need to know the God that created you, the God that says, this is such a beautiful thing. He says, he catches your tears and he holds them in a bottle. In fact, it's in my book and I can never remember where it is. I want to say it's in Zephaniah. I can never remember this verse. And I tell people all the time, the God that holds your tears in a bottle because they're precious is not a God that's waiting to punish you. Exactly. That's a game changer. I have my book here and I'm thinking that verse is just passage is just going to jump out at me. And of course it's not when I need it. I need there to memorize where that's at.
So that was that one guy was going, he wouldn't show he has control. I said, I don't want to know a controlling God. I want to know a loving God. Not one. And yet he was just all about. And then he talking about after I said that, he says, I'm going to go get my car. I'm going to get my Bible and save you. I said, really? He said,
oh, my goodness.
He said, I want to save. I said, I thought the Holy Spirit saves people. You're just being a vessel. He said, oh, I'm going to do it. I said, OK, buddy. And he said, where are you going to be in the next 10 minutes? I got to go to my car. I said, I'll be sitting here right waiting on you, buddy. And as soon as he left, went one way, I went the opposite way as soon as he left and got away from there. I mean, I'm telling you, I know that he probably meant good in his heart, but somewhere in his teaching, his learning is not good. And I would like to elaborate a little bit what you said. When someone says from the Bible, go read to be sure that's what they said in the Bible and what they said is correct.
Yeah.
And here's what one of my pastors that I had years ago. He's passed away at a young age, but he made a comment. He says, like people would throw around, oh, it's an eye for an eye. I'm going after him. The Bible says an eye for an eye. And he says, go and read three verses back from eye for an eye and three verses past it. Mm-hmm. And then get an idea what the verse, not just eye for an eye, anything.
Yeah.
Anything. Go read. That way you got a bigger knowledge of what that one little phrase people are throwing out.
So yeah.
Even though they throw it out, go read three, four lines above, three, four lines below, and make sure it all fits like it's supposed to in the content.
Exactly. Yeah. Context is everything. You know, it's interesting too, that guy saying that God wanted to control you. If God was a God of control, we would not have free will.
Exactly. Yes.
There's a big problem with his theology.
Yes. I don't know where he went to. I didn't ask him for his religious belief or anything, but But yeah, and again, I wasn't a Christian then, but when I went to school, church, and when I was younger, some things did sink in. Mm-hmm. I'm sure not as enough as he knew the Bible, but somewhere something got crossed in there for him mm-hmm. to be saying that. So, all right.
That's interesting.
Sharon, thank you for coming. Oh, you've been great and everything. Thank you for coming on. And share some your social media, how people, if they want to reach out and talk to you, maybe get some coaching, maybe when you come speaking, how they can come up with that, your book, The Girl in the Garage, with the three steps of getting past, to getting out of the past.
Sure. Well, you can find me at SharonHughes.net. I'm on Instagram. I'm Sharon Hughes Official. And I'm on Facebook. If you look up Called to Confidence, you'll find my business page there. And if anybody buys the book, The Girl in the Garage, it's on Amazon and it's Barnes & Noble, and it's carried in other places too. But if you take a picture of that receipt and you email it to me at hello@SharonHughes.net, I will give you my video course. It's called Beyond the Book. And that's kind of a fun course. We talk about some other things and go deep, and there's worksheets. But I would like for you to know also that the book is written like a workbook. It's so you can get a breakthrough, and it's a short book. It's a little over 100 pages, and it's written so that in a weekend, you can get a breakthrough. I don't want you to read a 500 pages and still not know what to do. But yeah, that's how you can find me. And one last thing that I would really like for you to know is that believing a lie is just as powerful as believing the truth.
Oh, that is. That may be your powerful message I was going to ask for right there. Yeah. I may use that as your powerful message to anybody. Believing a lie is as powerful as believing the truth. That is so true right there as well. Mm-hmm. And all your website and everything you put, I'll put in the description to make it easier for anybody that comes to the podcast or back to the YouTube and look later, and make it easier to find you. And I will be getting a copy, and I will be taking a picture of that receipt because I want to learn more about getting out of this past as well. So thank you for being here. Hey, everybody else, thank you for showing up. I've seen people popping in and out, and we got some likes on the big Facebook thumbs up, I see. And so appreciate, I don't say who you are, but I appreciate you coming in. Hey, anybody coming on the replay, be sure to share this out. Again, you don't have to be going through to be a girl in the waking up in the garage. You don't have to be a spinal cord injury, but the message of hope and being able to persevere in life is still the same. Hey, everybody else, do something today, tomorrow, something next week that's going to help you persevere past your paralysis.
Thanks for listening to the Professor of Perseverance podcast for motivation, inspiration, and encouragement. For more information, go to Facebook at Professor of Perseverance. Visit the website at professorofperseverance.com and view the YouTube channel, Dr. James Perdue, Professor of Perseverance.